There is a strange polarity in the world. It arcs between a fascination with the anomalous events that occasionally break through the boundaries of what is considered possible, and a complete rejection of everything that does not bow down to the constraints of a limited, limiting, and often tyrannical rationality. The various methods of shamanism, the practices of yoga, of tai chi, the ways of prayer and contemplation, the focused attention that holds us in times of grief and in times of deep personal and collective crisis. All of these can bring about an intensification of consciousness and a loss of the boundaries that limit or block our awareness of synchronic events and the reality of non-duality. Such experiences can act as instruments of deep transformation and force us to re-examine the materialism that denies any reality to the numinous, a materialism that stridently proclaims life to be devoid of any transcendent meaning. Most wisdom traditions accept that the gift of a sensitized consciousness, able to perceive the mental and energetic fields within which we live and move and have our being, does not usually fall out of the sky. Such states of consciousness can be both nurtured and enhanced by reflective and disciplined attention. Whether we value the cultivation of such attention and the understandings that it gives rise to is another matter. To find balance is a difficult thing. Throughout his life at Gethsemane Abbey, Thomas Merton continually urged the practice of contemplation in a world driven by action. Thomas Berry has also reminded us of the importance of pausing within the busyness of this furious time in order to connect more deeply with each other and with the living forces that permeate the natural world. Let us learn to take the time to catch the whispers in the wind, to catch the light that glances through the diamond dews of morning, to ride the luminous skyscapes that line the fiery clouds at day's end, even while we're fetching wood, carrying water, and tending the garden.
In talking about the fate of the Earth, we know that that's really up for grabs. We're at a moment where there are no guarantees as to its future. It's a question of our own critical choices. And I think that really what we are deeply in need of is a transforming vision, a vision that's deep enough that can take us from where we are and bring us into a new place that opens the future up to hope. And I think that's really what we've got to be about, is being people of hope.
There are many who have read the warning signs. Half a century ago, Rachel Carson called our attention to the damage caused by industrial methods of agriculture. At much the same time, Fritz Schumacher called for a rethinking of economics in order to halt the social, environmental, and spiritual degradation caused by corporate greed, rapacious globalization, and a rampant consumerism. Both Rosalie Bertell and Helen Caldicott, for a long time now, have warned us of the silent, slow, and spectrous death that emanates from the nuclear industry. Those who have understood the great turning that confronts us are faced with a twofold task. The first is to clearly identify the nature of the forces that have brought us to where we are. The second is to envision the changes needed in our thinking and in our actions that will enable future generations to live on the Earth in a very different way.
And it isn't that, it's not even so much a question, I don't think, of ethics, because you have very fine, righteous people who love their husbands and wives and their kids and don't tell lies, and they're pure and they're all sorts of good people. And it doesn't make any difference, their goodness doesn't make any difference if they're operating out of the old cosmology when they get into this. It's not a question of ethics. It can become a question of ethics. But you see, we don't have a tradition of ethics out of which to do this. Because our cosmology created an ethical system that was human, 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 God, but not human, universe, process. We don't have it. The Indians do, but we don't. Another example of that is that we now know that we're alive, the Earth is alive, because unlike Mars or the Moon or Venus or the other planets in our solar system, we're a water planet. 70% of the Earth's surface is salt water, and that is totally significant. That's why the Earth's alive. It's a fluid planet. But in our old cosmology, we call those fluids oceans. We name them Atlantic, Pacific, Arctic, Antarctic. They're places, they're things, they're its, they're stuffs. And you swim in them, you fish in them, you sail in them, you own them. You own home fronts on them. And so they've become extraordinarily convenient places, because they're so far away, to put all the kinds of things that we've suddenly learned how to create that we don't know what to do with, that we know are becoming lethal. And if your cosmology is such that those are just places, that's very logical to do that. But of course, now we're understanding that the Earths are the water is the fluids, the oceans are the fluids of the planet. And everything that lives has the ocean in it. The ocean isn't, they're not oceans, there's one single salt water system, and it flows through everything on the surface of the Earth that has life in it. That's why things are alive. Either maple trees or banana trees or you. If we took you to the chemistry lab and had you analyzed right now, I don't care how much you weigh, you're 70% salt water. And it's the same salt water as what we call the oceans. The rest of you are the minerals that form the crust of the earth. We're the earth with consciousness, with soul, with spirit. We're the earth in a new place, but we're the earth. And now we're understanding that these fluids which are within the earth, within the oceans, are in us. Because the oceans become the clouds, and the clouds become the rain, and the rain becomes the corn, and we eat the corn. And we get our minerals and our salt water replaced. And we cry the ocean. We excrete the ocean. And we're beginning to understand that the oceans are alive because they're a fabric of life. And in this long, painstaking process toward life, they became a fabric of millions of varied species, organisms, all of which are a fabric and community of life. Totally interdependent. All essential for their own for each other's existence, for the well-being of the whole to function and constantly maintain the oxygen that everything that lives needs. And as we continue to put our toxins in there, we're beginning to see that there are gaps in the fabric. That these biological organisms, which never evolved with the capacity to endure this sudden onslaught of new substances, is having its impact. They can't reproduce. They're becoming extinct. And as one becomes extinct, the food chain gets altered. And as those toxins build up in the food chain, higher and higher species are becoming extinct, so that the oceans can literally die. Jacques Cousteau says we have very few years left. And if we don't change what we're doing, the oceans are going to become toxic. They will have lost their capacity to break down toxins and to keep oxygen flowing. If the oceans do become toxic, then the clouds are going to be toxic, and the rain will be toxic, and the corn will be toxic. And our children will be toxic, and their tears will be toxic. And that's literally the death of the planet. So that if the planet breaks down and dies, The only cause of it will have been consciousness, because without consciousness, the whole thing was coded toward life. Something's interfering with the process. There are dynamics happening that at the lowest, at the most profound level, are altering the capacity of the Earth to do what the universe has mandated it to do, and that is to continue to live and to continue to heal and nourish and regenerate itself. Consciousness is causing the violation of that. And that's us. And I would maintain, not because we're evil, but because we think we have a full deck of cards, and we really don't. And we're dealing like mad. And we're laughing all through the game. And we keep waiting for that other card to come based on our projections of the past. The card's going to show up that'll get us out of the mess. And we don't have the full deck.
Let the cards fall as they may, they say. Must we? Must we witness and watch and do nothing as road cuts, clear cuts, the cut bodies of coyote, mountain lion, and deer are strung up by their hind legs as a warning to others they are not welcome? Must we witness and watch and do nothing as the peeled bodies of elders named Douglas fir, cedar, and larch are chained to the flatbeds of trucks and hauled away on our highways, highways littered with roadkills, roadkills paving the way to dams, dammed rivers, the Colorado, the Columbia, the Snake, and Mississippi, dammed canyons, Glen Canyon, Davis Gulch, Cathedral in the Desert. Speak their names, remember their names, these places of beauty, these places of origin, toxic, toxic wastes, toxic deserts, bombed, battered, and betrayed in the name of national security. Speak their names, remember their names, the Nevada test site in the Mojave, Hanford on the banks of the Columbia, Rocky Flats, Alamogordo, Dugway, the floodplains of eastern Idaho. The nuclear waste is shimmering, simmering. Coyote watches with burning eyes, Bosch's owl with burning eyes in paradise. This is the natural history of the dead. There is a war raging in our own nation, and it is not civil. Speak their names, remember their names. They are going, going, the salmon, grizzly, tortoise, tiger beetle, bobcat, and lynx, marbled murrelet, red-spotted frog. They are disappearing before our eyes, our own eyes. Find their eyes, burning eyes. We are slowly committing suicide. This is the natural history of the dead. The land is being stripped, strip mined, strip searched. Let the cards fall where they may, they say.
Galileo was finding through his telescope and through his experiments ways to confirm the insights of Copernicus. He was trying to share that with the culture that was embedded in an Aristotelian worldview, a philosophical understanding of the cosmos. And because he was trying to give a perceptual change, but it could only be heard in a philosophical context or a religious context, a theological context, he couldn't penetrate into the... He couldn't bring his thoughts forward. And all he was talking about was that this telescope provided the ability for everyone in the culture to look and see that the Earth was not the center of the universe with the sun and the moon and stars going around it. He was just saying, the way the universe is not what everyone else heard was, if that's true, everything we believe in, everything we hold, everything we teach, all the values of our culture can't be true. And the fear and rejection from that is what silenced him and pushed him into true silence. And there's a way in which what the new universe story is suggesting is very similar. What people like Brian Swim and Thomas Berry and all of the physicists and astrophysicists and scientists who are showing us through these immense new instruments that we have that Galileo would have died for, what they're showing us is a far vaster understanding of the universe than even his little telescope could open up. But if it is so, all of our traditions, all of our institutions, our economic systems, our religious systems, our ethical systems, our agriculture systems, healing systems, commercial, governmental, all of them will be called into question, because they are all based on a fundamental belief that no longer holds up when you break through the perceptual shell and see the universe as it has always been. So I'd like to just share some reflections that might shed light on why the energy, the psychic evolved and with which we've been endowed over the 5,000 years of Western civilization, why that energy simply is no longer available for us to shape our lives, our future, or to enable us to break through the terrible crisis that we find in this moment at beginning of the 21st century. We all know that the economic system is just not adequate. More people are living in poverty than ever. The earth is being ravaged. And yet, the system, the commercial establishment, as Thomas Berry would say, isn't filled with bad people. Now, there could be bad people in them. But mostly, they're good people going to work, having a job, doing something they know how to do that's useful for people in terms of products or goods. But at the same time that they're doing that, there is this total extraction out of the substance of the earth, which is causing the diminishment of life in a way that the earth has never experienced in the last 65 million years. And unless we can understand that there's more than good or evil at play here, we now are not going to have the capacity to transform these crises into a new possibility for life to break out of this shell and find nourishment from a far greater and expansive place of inspiration. Fundamentally, we're at a point of time where we're all shifting our perspectives about our cosmology, and we have these new insights, and we have the implications of this new cosmology that we have, but we're living within institutions that are totally rooted in the old one, and they're inflexible. You can't make a shift within structures like you can make a shift in understanding. And the ambiguity and the tension and the conflict we're experiencing is part of the process of pain and what makes it so difficult to find out how to deal with it. But basically, in the cosmology, which is the premise out of which Western civilization grows, even though there are different stories among the peoples who eventually comprise the root of Western civilization, there are a couple of implications in those stories that have the same sense. And the first is that however the divine, or the deities, or the gods, or whatever, however they were imaged, they were seen as being fundamentally transcendent to the universe. They lived outside of the universe. They were greater than it. This god or gods created this. This was different from God,
and God was a transcendent being who had power and dominion over it and was far greater, different than it, apart from it, other than the world. The new cosmology the very old connection to a 15 billion year process causes us to do two things, I think. One is that we've got to come home. We've got to own our identification with the Earth and with the spiritual dynamics of the universe. We are literally stars thinking about themselves. And we don't exist except we exist in that condition, at least in the now. And we don't have our life and our nourishment and our learning except it comes out of the earth, which is our very body. And the earth as a body is a communion and a community. At its deep level, it's in communion with itself, and in its external manifestation, it is a community of all the beings who share existence on this planet, from oxygen to the highest organisms. And if this earth is sick, we will be sick. We have to come home. We've got to get out of the dualisms of the past, and we've got to become members of the community of home. And I mean home now in terms of the larger sense of where we live on this planet. We live in a particular region which long, long, long before humans ever came onto it was marked by a unique geological formation, a unique temperature, unique water systems, unique climates and macroclimates, and those were the conditions that came out of the process which determined what kind of vegetation could exist there. And over long eons of time, that community of vegetation worked out this balancing act wherein all of them could coexist together in total obedience to these principles. And any species that came into the community and didn't abide by these principles got kicked out fast. It went into oblivion. And only the ones that could abide in the balancing act survived. And it's only the insects that abided and fit in with the whole that survived. And only the birds and animals that did it. And unless we know that that's the source of our health and our nourishment and our government, we are not going to make it. We've got to come home to that prior community, because the community is sick. Our water is sick, our air is sick, our soil is sick, our vegetation is sick, and they no longer even can become the source of our inspiration or our poetry or our knowledge of God. How will we baptize children with toxic water and tell them about God? How will we give pills and medication out with toxic water and make people well? How will we eat contaminated food and think that we will be nourished? We've got to come home in a new humility and become members of the community, or else we're simply going to have to be a bad experiment on the planet and get kicked out. We are literally stars thinking about themselves.
We are stardust. Thank you. What can I walk beside you? I've come to lose the smile. I feel like I am a cog in something turning. Maybe it's just the time of year.
Choice. We make a choice to hope. And once you do that, then it makes all the difference in the world about what you do.
Let us learn to take the time to catch the whispers in the wind, to catch the light that glances through the diamond dews of morning, to ride the luminous skyscapes that line the fiery clouds at day's end. Even while we're fetching wood, carrying water, and tending the garden.